All of April, Jazz Night in America honors the latest class of NEA Jazz Masters. Next up, drummer and educator Billy Hart.
I've gathered enough material. If I had to stop traveling as much, I'd have enough to study for the rest of my life.
Peer inside the wisdom of a forever student. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is being brought to you by Mount Zion Baptist Church.
Mount Zion Baptist Church, Nashville, celebrates the 30th pastoral anniversary of Bishop Joseph W. Walker III for 30 years of leadership, love, and legacy. Celebrate with us in person or virtually via YouTube or Facebook Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. as we welcome guest speaker Bishop T.D. Jakes and gospel artist Leandre Johnson to our Old Hickory Boulevard location. For more details, please visit MountZionNashville.org. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, Independent Agent, State Farm Insurance, Mount Zion Baptist Church, and Nashville State Community College. And support for WFSK comes from the Ryman Auditorium, featuring Gladys Knight on Monday night, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are still available, and you can certainly go on to the Ryman.com website and check it out. Of course, Gladys, you know, one of our legacies out here in music, and just all around, just a blessing to the music for so many decades. Now, thank you for all of you all tuning in today, and this, gonna break it up just a little bit and go to back to our normal routine of talking to the authors. And give you time to digest the candidates that you've heard from over the last 3 weeks. Dr. Randall Jelks is back with us this afternoon. He's the author, in case you were listening that day, of the book entitled Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America. And Dr. Randall Jelks is a professor, a documentary producer, and the author of African Americans in the Furniture City and Benjamin Elijah May's Schoolmaster of the Movement. And he's written quite a few books that many of you all may be familiar with. And he teaches at the University of Kansas. Go Jayhawks. And I had to throw that in, Professor.
You're a Kansas Rock Chop Jayhawk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know it's Rock Chop, but I'm saying, you know, when I get home, we Rock Chop it. But, you know, they don't know Rock Chop here in Nashville. Man. They won't even have a clue what I'm talking about. But anyway, having said that, there's a lot that has been happening since the last time we talked, and I'm so happy to have you back on. I hope you're well.
I am. Thank God I'm well. And it sounds like Nashville is well. I was like, oh, Gladys, Knight is in town. I better fly to Nashville.
Gladys. Yeah, she is. Right. Yeah, stuff is picking up here. And people are coming out of their shells a bit. And some people never went in their shell. They just kept running and going, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so But it has changed a bit, and hopefully it's that same way for you back home in Kansas.
Very much so, because, you know, with the Kansas winning the men's national basketball tournament, you know, people were out in the street.
Yes, most
in Lawrence,
definitely.
Kansas. Yeah, yeah.
Most definitely. I think the population doubled.
Yeah, it did.
Yes, there was panic and pandemonium because everybody was out in the street.
That's right.
Yes, most definitely. And Dr. Jelks is an award-winning author. And he has done so much great work. And I'm glad he agreed to come back and finish the discussion on his book, Letter to Martin. And Dr. Jelks, you want to reintroduce the first portion of our conversation on, you know, just give the audience the overview of the first part of the book before we go into any further.
Sure. Yes, I wrote these books. I began to write this book in 2017, when after Donald Trump was elected president, because I had to go speak to a college on Martin Luther King Day, and I wanted students to understand and adults to understand the significance of King, not just King, the movement, and what those kinds of things require in terms of leadership, in terms of a kind of spirituality, actually, that you have to keep working toward to create democracy and keep democracy. Mm-hmm.
That's very much on the hearts and minds of so many people right now, is the keeping of it. And so for many, we should be deeply concerned. And I'd like to go into a couple of chapters today. In particular, Chapter 9, All Labor Has Dignity. And tell the audience more about this one and how in your books, you know, it's interesting how you have a few lyrics in here. Just, you know, it's a, the Chain Gang, and then I saw Mercy, Mercy Me or something. And tell me what that's all about and what you find in Chapter 9.
Well, in Chapter 9, when Dr. King goes to Memphis, he says, you know, he gives this speech he had given before. Part of it is about labor, and that all labor has dignity. And I wanted to, since these are letters that I won't get a response back to, I'm really asking questions about that, because, yes, it is true that all labor has dignity. Yes, my grandparents, and perhaps yours, is that there, you know, there's only good work and honest work that has dignity to it. But the real question I wanted to ask is that the majority of laborers, or overwhelming number of laborers in the United States, are women, and also around the world. And so do we really mean that? Because if we do mean that, then we have to create systems of equality and egalitarianism for women. You know, I mean, women work, were out front, particularly black women and Spanish-speaking women were out front as essential workers in our grocery stores during the pandemic. Do we really mean that all labor has dignity? And if so, that means that everybody should be getting paid equally. We shouldn't take teaching for granted, where overwhelming numbers of women are employed as teachers, but get less pay than, say, other people.
And in this letter, in your letters that your letters to Martin book, how much of this was you felt after you put it all together, might he really have thought? And did you go by his writings, or his family's
I'm a scholar at heart, and so I I researched and thought about many things he thought about. I wanted to react to things. One of the things that should impress the public is that King was a very thoughtful person. That he was thinking about he wasn't just thinking about the present. He's like, okay, we're going to defeat segregation, but he's also thinking ahead. What's next?
Yeah.
He's thinking about questions of, already in 1961, he's already thinking about what's automation going to mean for black and brown workers, mm-hmm. right? Because, he's already seen the results of what the cotton picker did, the automated cotton picker. So he's already thinking about these kinds of issues of automation. What does that mean for people's employment and wages and so forth? And that essentially black people are working class people. I know we like to pretend many of us are middle class, but we're really still working class people. We need jobs. We need employment. And he's thinking about what is the kind of terms that's going to happen as automation increases. So I did a lot of research on his speeches around labor, his mining, his letters to family and friends. And what's rich about it, what anybody can do, is go to Stanford University, the Martin Luther King Jr. Institute, and find his letters online. Find discussions between he and other people online. So it's available to the public as well.
But I find it interesting that you felt compelled to write what you would say, And the fact, too, Dr. Jelks, that he was so futuristic,
I mean,
when people tell the stories and try to revise our history, there's some stuff they just ain't gonna be able to revise.
right. That's correct. And of course, even in his lifetime, when the man was living, people were trying to revise what he was saying, right there in public. And he was always very careful how he spoke. So, yeah, but that, when people says, well, they always trying to revise Dr. King. And it was like, well, they were trying to do that when he was alive as well.
So there's nothing new under the sun.
There is nothing new under the sun.
Definitely. The name of the book today is Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America. Professor Randall Maurice Jelks is the author, and we're going to pick up the discussion on the other side. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 615-329-8810. Take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Busy, but it's moving out here on the south loop, the west loop. It's busy 24 headed back towards Murfreesboro. A little crowded down 65 up towards Goodlettsville. This traffic report brought to you by PensacolaBeach.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is being brought to you by Nashville State Community College.
Nashville State Community College, with over 80 programs preparing you to go right to work or transfer easily to a university after graduation. Increase your career earning potential with an associate degree or technical certificate earned at Nashville State. College credits earned at Nashville State can transfer to public and private four-year institutions. Academic, financial, and abundant support available. Nashville State Community College will give you a place of belonging. Apply today. Summer and fall registration starts April 4th. On-campus assistance available or visit nscc.edu.
Tossed trash is back. TDOT spends $19 million a year picking it up. That's because there are over 100 million pieces of it on our beautiful Tennessee roadways. Talking trash is great because it's the show that's going to end littering in Tennessee. We need everyone to join the Nobody Trashes Tennessee movement. Conveniently located at NobodyTrashesTennessee.com. And watch my show, Talking Trash, the show featuring actual talking trash.
Brought to you by the Tennessee Department of Transportation, the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is being brought to you by Mount Zion Baptist Church.
Mount Zion Baptist Church, Nashville, celebrates the 30th pastoral anniversary of Bishop Joseph W. Walker III for 30 years of leadership, love, and legacy. Celebrate with us in person or virtually via YouTube or Facebook Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. as we welcome guest speaker Bishop T.D. Jakes and gospel artist Leandre Johnson to our Old Hickory Boulevard location. For more details, please visit MountZionNashville.org. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University. And I do want to mention that we have an increasing chance for rain tonight, and up to 60%. And between, you know, overnight while you're resting, between 1 and 5 a.m., and it doesn't say anything but just showers, so hopefully we won't have anything beyond that. And a chance for rain continues tomorrow, and then cloudy, 40% tomorrow, and the temperature's up at 77, and for the weekend in the 80s, starting to feel just a lot like the good old summertime. How is Dr. Jokes in Lawrence, Kansas? Are you all experiencing spring yet?
Well, it's been up and down, so it's been cold, and it's like the weather you're getting, it's coming from us, rainy, and it's supposed to get warmer and by the weekend, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, my sister, who lives in Topeka, said, you know, couple weeks ago when I was talking to her, you know, I was saying how nice it was, and she said, well, it just snowed here, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, we couldn't help it. The weather has been quite unusual for this time,
because
one day it's warm, one day it's warm, and next day, like, you know, you look out the window, you go, what?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to believe. Now, today's book, Letters to Martin, Growing Up King, is chapter 9, and you start with Isley Brothers Fight the Power poem. Here, I mean, lyrics. But your Martin letter is Martin growing up King, as your son Dexter wrote, was never easy. And tell us more about this letter to Dr. King.
I perchance in a used bookstore found Dexter King's book called Growing Up King. And I'm a baby boomer, and I grew up king too, in a different sense. I, wasn't my parent, but in the sense of the legacy was around me. I was in beginning the middle school or junior high, as it was called back in those days, and so we all grew up king. And I wanted to kind of frame this letter to the boomers, because the letter to Dr. King is kind of a criticism, because I felt like many boomers, those of us who were able to get to college and stuff, let the kind of generation coming after us down a lot, because it required of us to think more deeply and more critically about what we were aiming for. And so my letter there is Growing Up King is about really the political commitment as, again, using the word spiritual commitment, because the letting down the programs that so much trained all of us to speak in public, whether that was in church or at school, the kind of institutional values that would train the next generation. People seem more concerned with their materiality than they were about the next generation, and begin to use what I call Dr. King as a weapon of condemnation to the next generation, the Generation X and millennials, as a, sort of a kind of ideal of punishment. So I really wanted to say that, you know, in this kind of letter, that we have to rethink that, and each generation has to rethink its own kinds of what is it going to be committed to, not just the material things.
Well, and I would say that, what do you see, since you're a professor at a major university, what do you see generationally versus years ago?
Well, you know, of course, you can't, it's very difficult to compare the generations, as my adult children tell me, you know, the boomers had it different than they are. They're millennials, but there are certain basic things that one has to come to identify. What is it that you're going to stand for? What is it that you are going to commit yourself to? You know, I think about teaching a great deal. Without the teachers I had, I wouldn't be here. And many of those teachers didn't make it a whole lot of money, but that was their kind. I'll use a Christian word here, vocation. That was their duty to send us, the next generation, off. And we had a duty to send the next generation off, and sometimes we forget that. And that is our commitment. With the levels of mass incarceration coming on and so forth, we had a duty to do a little bit better on those things. And so that's what my letter was really trying to get at. What was our commitment? And commitments are something that, you know, are sacred.
Well, there's a lot I see that, you know, we didn't pass on to our kids. And
yeah.
I just, you know, a lot, that because we went through it with our parents and they were the greatest generation and all that, we had it with all that rules and regulations, you know, and we just did not pass a lot of things like respect and courtesy and things of that nature on to our children the way we should have. And that's very, very sad. So I think in terms of what will today's mothers, the millennial mothers, pass on if they don't do anything.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that one of the reasons anybody writes is to hoping to pass on to people to at least get the conversation going, and get the conversation going on about the things that we should pass on. Not everything should be passed on. Like the past generation had their problems as well. But the strengths should be passed on. Those are the things that should be passed on. Not everything was good in the past. I wouldn't romance it in any way. Right.
Yeah, not at all. I'm just saying respect and, you know, courtesy and things of that nature. You know, when little kids want to cuss you out and they, you know, can't even spell the word, you know. Okay.
And of course, that's also because, I mean, this is where we have to make ourselves committed to policy issues. When communities get torn down, right? I mean, communities got torn down. People blame it on the people there, but communities really get torn down by public policies. That's why we vote. When you had on judges earlier, that's why we vote.
That's right.
Because the policies didn't take in consideration. No, they're real people living in those communities. Mm-hmm. Or the laws that allow companies to now buy up the neighborhood surrounding this and charge exorbitant rates where people once made, you know, housing. It wasn't much in their world, but as my grandmother used to explain to me, you can't just be walking on Mr. Jones's dirt. That's his dirt. and you get that. But by allowing communities being torn apart, we don't have Mrs. and Mrs. Jones living next to us anymore.
Don't have nobody's dirt. Because, you know,
it's
been so long. And
Dr.
Jones, just lastly, Chapter 11, the content of our character, you know, that has been completely taken out of context or hijacked from people on the right. And could you bring it back to perspective?
Yes. But, you know, I mean, the people who are quote conservative use that line, but they don't ever use the first part of "I Have a Dream" speech. In the first part, he says, "Look, you know, the United States wrote Black America a check, and it's been marked insufficient funds." And so they like to use that. I tried to explore in that letter. Content of my character is to talk about the relationship between Dr. King and the women in his life, and not in a salacious kind of way, but in a way that the way that we understand the character of each of us. All of us are flawed, no matter what. And Dr. King was a person on the road. If you really study his life, he's really never at home. He's got 2 days at home with his kids and his wife, and he's back somewhere else. And whatever was happening in the country, he was required to be flying all over the place. So, you know, people say, "Oh, he had dalliances," as though that ruins his whole life. And I wanted to say, here is a person who had relationship to his grandmother, his mother. They were all very strong women in his life. So I wanted to explore that. Dr. King is the generation of my father, right? And good men, flawed at the same time. And so we all ought to be more forgiving, even our heroes and heroines. Have their good side and their bad side, just like our parents. He was a generation of men who were pretty sexist. That was the generation of men. I'm not going to cover that up. It's just a generation of men. And so, but that sexism is also that those same men, more than even their white counterparts, encourage their daughters to go to college. So we have to also, you know, and encourage their daughters, many of them encourage their daughters to be the best that they could be. So we have to explore all of those kinds of things. So that's what I was trying to do in that letter, that we have all kinds of different configurations of family now, but it's still family. It may not be like to what we were used to, but it's still family, and we have to encourage that those extended families that took care of all of us in whatever way we can.
This hour's book, Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America, written by Dr. Randall Maurice Jelks, professor, documentary producer, and award-winning author. And Dr. Jelks is a professor at the University of Kansas, Rock Chalk Jayhawk, KU. I wanted to get that in before we got off the air, Doc. Since you said it, I had to go on and let it out, right. Okay?
You know, my basketball students will be very happy with you. They're going to be happy. I won't tell them.
No, at my house, it'd be KU. This is how it would go in my house. Yeah, I'm on the radio, so I gotta make it be exciting, but I'd be all cool with it. Anyway, having said that, Dr. Jelks, this has been a joy to get to talk to you twice, and please stay in touch with me on your work that you do. Okay?
I will. I promise you, I will. And maybe I'll see you in Nashville at the Southern Book Festival, I'm hoping to be in.
Yes, well, you definitely have to come and by and holler at me when you come to Nashville.
I will do so. Yeah. I promise you I will.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Dr. Randall Maurice Jelks. And
thank you so much.
You have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Oh, they're bringing that book festival back. That means we're going to have some company. Book is going to come back. You know, all the books that's been on this broadcast, they coming. Anyway, Nashville, that's all ALL that we have for you today. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget, who loves you?
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411?